All right. So I want to share with you an idea about Rabbi Sacks. It happens to be, I think, one of the only, maybe there's one more, the pieces that we haven't done yet in Covenant Conversation. He's got like six or seven. So like, it's pretty like comprehensive, like, you know, exhaustive Rabbi Sacks immersion in Parshas Balosra. But okay, still have one more. So much of a Midbar seems to be similar to Shmos. We have a lot of stories that mirror each other. Obviously, if I asked you what would be the most obvious story that we have, like, you know, between the two that's the same, or more or less the same?
Matan Torah.
So we have that in Shmos and we have in Devarim. Okay, but like two stories that are very similar in both. So let's think like water, right? The Jews run out of water. It happens in B'Shalach, right? And then it happens again in Chukat. So we have a lot of stories that mirror each other. And yet what seems to be the challenge is the first time around, Moshe Rabbeinu was like, you know, pretty like, he's pretty laid back. It's like not such a big deal. He manages it. And then like in Bamidbar, he seems to get very frustrated and very frustrated very often. Now, if you want to tell me, like with the water, that the reason why he's frustrated is it's 40 years later. I mean, come on. Like, God has been taking care of you for, like, all this time. Like, okay, so the water stopped for a few minutes. Like, move past it. I'll tell you, like, it's a complete side note, but our chanaya, just like the equivalent of our street, from Kew Garden Hills, it's like a, you know, like the driveway. But our chanaya is really a street. Like, it's called Rehov Yavne, but it's like a, it's a chanaya. So anyway, We have like a group chat, which is like funny because I'm sitting here like now in America and I'm like predicting what's going to happen. So like the water company shuts our water down like often because there's a problem with one of the major pipes like underneath their street. So like all the time. And like everybody's reaction is like the same every time. Like Nachman, the French guy, puts like that scary emoji face every single time the water goes off. I'm like, dude, like it was yesterday and the day before.
Just copy like, paste the whole.
I'm like, I understand. But, like, you would think, usually, like, the first time, it's like, oh, my God, panic settles in. The second time, you're like, we did this already yesterday. Like, it should be, like, pretty relaxed. I don't know. Moshe Rabbeinu is going through the same thing. So if you want to tell me 40 years later, I get it. He could say, like, the generation has come, the generation is gone. Like, I get it. But what about when it's here? Like, anything that happens in Balosra, it's a year later? 2 years later, it's not that far off. So why is it that it gets him so upset? So that's really...
Well, it's a flip-flip. Like, we just had this, and when it was fine, and now...
Yeah. Yeah, but, right, so I hear that, but, like, they just had, like, Har Sinai, and then 40 days later, like, they do Chet HaEgel. If, like, they could do that, then having the same complaint a year later should not be, like, such a shocker. And yet, it seems to bother Moshe Rabbeinu a lot, so much so that I underlined and bolded like five Sukkim Mishpalina that I'll never do again because reading it is going to be like really hard, but with all the nekudos like completely covered up. But whatever. Anyhow, I just it doesn't make any sense. So let's take a look at the Pesukim. And we'll go from there.
So when does this happen? It's just a year later now?
Yeah, it's like they just left Sinai. Right? It's Vahib and Sa'aron. They just like left Har Sinai. So you're talking about like they're at Sinai for, I don't know, a year plus? Like that's, you just sit there, you're like, come on, really? I mean, that's always been my reaction to all of Parshas Balosra. Like they just, it's like you do that? Like, how can you go from there to there so quickly? But again, Chet Tegel is the same question. Okay, so we'll take a look at these psukim, and we'll go. We'll take if we'll see what happens. So here I'm kimitonim rabbis now. Hashem veishma Hashem veichara povati varvam eish Hashem v'tochav tzeh machane. So the people they're complaining, and it's bad in the eyes of God, in the ears of God, and Hashem hears it. He gets angry and he burns them with a fire, and it catches the edge of the machane. So the people cry out to God, to Moshe, and Moshe dives in Hashem, and Hashem calms the fire, or puts out the fire. And the place is called Taveira, which means from burn, because God has consumed them with a fire. So the Asaf Suf, whoever they are, that was in their midst, they desired stuff, and they sit and they cry, and they say, who's going to give us food? Now, I want you to know, I'm about to read Pasuk Hey, and it just struck me that in my entire life, I never understood this Pasuk as well as I do after a year in living in Israel. I'll explain to you in a moment. We remember the fish that we ate in Mitzrayim for free, etakishuim, I don't know, like the gourds, betavatichim, and the watermelons, the chatzir, the betzalim, I think chatzir is like leek or something like that, the onions, betashumim, and the garlic. They say, we had it so good in Egypt. We ate for free all this amazing stuff, fish and outstanding stuff. So I have to tell you, I never liked watermelon before until I made Aliyah. Like, I'm being serious. Our first week in Israel, people brought us dinners because we were stuck in Bidud. Miriam Schwartz, right, formerly from Semset, she brought us a cut of watermelon. We had like no food in the house other than like the things that people brought and whatever, like family, like stacked us up, whatever. I ate so much watermelon that week. I was like, this is unbelievable. And then, so much so, that when it went out of season, which happens in Israel often with the fruit, I was like, shoot, now what do we do? I was like, I have no fruit like anymore to eat. Like that was like my one thing. So it came back right before Pesach. So I bought a watermelon for Pesach. And it was like the biggest watermelon I've ever bought. It was like 20 kilo or something crazy like that. It cost more than my brisket. I kid you not. It was a 150 shekel watermelon. I had no idea until like they weighed it. And then I was like, yeah, look, covered Pesach Kodesh. It's so good, right? And the what? Why did I tell you this? Because the watermelon, that you can't get watermelon in Israel, there's no such thing as Shemitah watermelon. It's either Heter Mechira or you can't have it. So it's like they have like Avatichim Mitzrayim. They're like Egyptian watermelon, which are not really from Egypt. They're like just southern Israel or beyond. But I get it. Like maybe they had some free watermelon there that was just better than their brisket. But anyway, it's the whole thing is so crazy. This is their complaint. We're upset. We don't have meat. We used to have it. They were like enslaved. Right? Could you imagine someone sitting there saying, God, I miss Hitler and Auschwitz. I mean, it was just so good back then. We had these potatoes. They were nobody would say that. Like, it's so messed up for someone to even like think that. And that's what they're saying. So, when this pasuk, I think, begins to explain what they're really upset about. They're saying is, I can't believe we're eating the same food every single meal for the last 2 years. Even though I know midrashically it could taste like anything you want. But yeah, like...
But even that gets old.
But right, it's like just looking at the same... I know, right? There's something about looking at your food in addition to tasting your food. And they're like, we can't do this anymore. And now the Torah takes like a little side note. This is like the narration. And basically the Torah says, you want to know how was it? Was it seed? And it looked like that. And you were able to grind it knead it. And it was like this honey dough tasting thing. And after, in the morning, when the tal came upon the camp, so on top of it was the man. So people are complaining. They want to eat better. So Moshe hears the people crying. Okay, we'll get to that in a sec. Each person by the entrance to their tent, and God is angry, ma'od, and it's bad in the eyes of Moshe. Okay, so it's interesting. It just hit me, although it might have hit me a different time and I don't remember it. But Vayishma Moshe hears it, and yet at the end of the pasuk, Ve'enei Moshe Ra. It's bad in his eyes. So it's bad in his ears. We had that Ra'ihiam Kimutonim Rabbi Azneh Hashem in pasuk Aleph, and then at the end, it's Ve'enei Moshe Ra. In Moshe's eyes, it's bad. Bochel mishpechotav, what does that mean? So Rashi says that what they were actually complaining about was, God is so restrictive. can't believe we're not allowed to have certain illicit relations. I don't know, I think Rashi quotes incest as one of them, which makes you sit there and say, like, gee, like they're like upset about the torture of Egypt, but they had free watermelon. And yeah, you know, God, why did you have to like cross off these things from like your list? Whole thing doesn't make any sense. And that's their big complaint. So what happens? Moshe turns to God and says, why? Why are you doing this to me? What did I ever do wrong to you that you're giving me them such a burden? What analogy does he use in Yud-Bet to describe his relationship with the Jewish people? Right, he's a father, the parent to this child. He says, like, God, what did I ever do to you that you make them like such a burden to me that they're like, you know, children that you have to take care of every second of the day?
I've always read it totally different. Why are they coming on me? Like, did I give birth to them? Am I their mother? Why am I in charge?
Okay, you could read it either way. This morning, I had Rabbi Sachs, and I was like attempting to make makoros, and I don't know, my pen was holding my place, and then I moved the pen to write something else, and then like the page flipped back or forward, I don't know, a couple pages. And I was so tired, I kept reading. I was like, oh, wow, this is fascinating. It's like two articles later, right? And I was like, wow, I'm going to add that in. I didn't even notice that when I read this on Shabbos. It's like, I don't know how I missed it. It was like such a good point. We did it 2 years ago as the Chabura. But I feel like that was balos of COVID. So like all bets are off there. But Rabbi Sachs reads it the way I read it. And he says that the mistake that Moshe made is that sometimes a leader looks at the people and says, I'm like their parent. But they're not talking about like any type of parent. We're talking about a parent of an infant. I have to get up all night long. I have to take care of the baby and blah, 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 blah. He says the problem with that is that if a leader wants their people to be successful, if he treats them like a baby, they'll never be successful. So he then goes on to say that the amazing thing about Moshe is that usually when you have a leader like that, those are like the charismatic like leaders that like convince everybody to do things that are just like horrible, right? Dictators or like these like you could picture like the televangelist that's like, I'm going to heal you all, you just have to give me all your money, right? And the people like, they believe and they do all that, right? It's like that's the thought you would have normally with a leader like that. But if you take a look at the next source, we'll come back to Balosra, so Shmot Dalit, what does Moshe say? I'm not a man of speech. The most defining characteristic of a charismatic leader is his ability to speak. Not today, not yesterday. I'm a kvad peh, kvad lashon. So the Ralbag explains, what does that mean? So he says, Ratzel Omer Shaya Kvad Peh, Be'ofen Shaloya Yacholo Tzimi Piv HaDiborkim Bekoshi. He could not get anything out other than like in a really labored way. Kimin Hag Ha, I have no idea what that word means. And I'm not sure if that's sometimes Sefaria. Well, I do like Sefaria. Sometimes they mess up the words. So I'm not even sure where to go with that. But I assume it's like the people that are just like not good speakers. It's saying what Moshe Rabbeinu was, it wasn't that we always say he was a stutterer. It's not a stutterer. It's that there is a gift to be able to take content that you want to share with people and say it in a way that's presented in a neat, organized way that actually people can understand. Right? You know, sometimes you see that. You'll have like a brilliant, brilliant person. He has the most unbelievable thoughts in his head. But when he tries to talk to people, like maybe he could talk to like his own genius crowd, but he can't talk to regular people. So the Ralbag is saying that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was. Moshe Rabbeinu could not l'sader dvarav. He could not get his thoughts into a way that would coherently be explained to the people. It's amazing, right? That's like completely different than how we normally understand Kfar Peh. We think about the Medrash, he burnt his tongue, and from then on, he could not get anything out. But not at all. So the irony is that he talks about himself in this parent way, which Moshe Rabbeinu really is. But in terms of his leadership style being a parent one, it's not a dangerous parent who's like overwhelming and does not allow the child to grow. But nonetheless, he has this really, really strong way with the Jewish people. So what happens? So he says, okay, fine. God, why did you dump this on me? And not only that, may I only go basar le tate l'chol ha'am ha'zeki if ko'alai le'mor tan al-basar no'chel ha'goz. And where do you want me to even begin to feed 3 million people meat? Lo'ochal no'chel ha'vadi la'seh de'kol ha'am ha'zeki kaved mimeni. He says, I can't do this. It's too hard. V'mkachat o'seh li, and if this is what you want me to do, or if this is what you want to do to me, hargeni na'harog, kill me. It's fine. I don't want to see the bad that's going to happen, or the bad that's going to happen for me. Is Moshe Rabbeinu the only leader that ever said to Hashem that he should kill him?
Eliyahu.
Less famous? Well, not the personality, but like the story. Yirmiyahu also. He's like, I never wanted this job. Why are you doing this to me? So why is Moshe Rabbeinu so dramatic here? We're going to see in just a few moments that in Perek Tadzayin of Sefer Shmot, similar story. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's fine. It's no big deal. Now, just before we go on to Shmos, who gets the last word in this story? So it looks, right? It looks like it closes out the story. Moshe Rabbeinu gets the last word. It's not true, because what happens in the very next story? In the very next story is Moshe Rabbeinu is told by God, go esfali shivimish mizikne yisrael. Go gather 70 people. So God is saying, I'm not letting you kill yourself, and I'm not letting you be killed, and I'm not letting you like quit. But okay, there's a problem. We have to fix it. How are we going to fix it? We're going to hire 70 people to work with you. What's going to happen? It's going to lighten the load. But this seems to be the consistent theme of Sefer Bamidbar.
Doesn't Hashem respond to him right after this paragraph?
Yeah. Es felish shivimish mizikney yisrael. Meaning he does not allow Moshe Rabbeinu the final word.
Yeah, but then he tells him, they're going to eat meat, I'm going to bring you meat. Isn't that in Balosa?
So, yeah, they do
not
have
not for
that.
A day, not for 2 days, for a month they're going
to
eat meat.
Right. So I'm saying God basically says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to take care of it. Like you might think like, okay, well just like, you know, I'm going to let it go and you're going to say what you're going to say, but I'm not going to accept it. You're not quitting. It's not going to be your resignation. Like I have my plan and I'm going to make it happen. Right. So immediately afterwards, plus like that Zion is collect this Canaan. And then afterwards, later on, he says, okay, now I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. And by the way, Moshe then says to him, but what are we going to do? I still need to feed 600,000 people. What are like these Zakenim going to do? He says, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So in Sefer Bamidbar, we have a lot of things like this. And Moshe Rabbeinu seems to have his hands tied. The water, he gets angry. The story with Zimri, what happens? He doesn't have an answer. He just sits there. Pinchas has to come along and do it. What's going on here? So that's really the question I want to try to understand. So let's take a look at Perek Tet Zayin in Shmot and see how they compare to each other and perhaps understand what is the difference between the two of them. We're talking about the 15th day of the second month. It is basically a month, it's the 15th day of Iyar. So a month after the Jewish people leave Egypt, we have this problem. So what happens? They complain on Moshe and Aaron. So good in Egypt. We sat by the Sir Habasar, I don't know, the flesh pot. I think that's how Art School translates it.
Pot of flesh.
Yeah. It's like, well, what are they talking about? Like, that's what they're saying. B'chleinu lechem l'sova, we ate bread to our hearts content. Otseitem otanu l'midbar zalamitu at kal zeberav. You took us out to here to kill us.
I think it's a spit, by the way.
Which one?
The
Sir Basar? Could be. I don't know. I mean, I vaguely recall that, like, that's
the... I'm more palatable as a spit anyway. But,
right. So, where did this happen? Like, is this really true? A month after they're leaving Egypt, they're thinking back, oh, wow. Yeah, it's so good in Egypt like that.
This is the people that don't know how to be free.
They don't know how to be free. Okay.
So it starts romanticizing whatever they if they're...
But even the Yom Suf, you know, I don't know if it was you, I mean, I think it's Rabbi Israel, actually, who was saying that, you know, it's like there was a constant pull back to Egypt, you know, because they sort of hovered on the other side of the Yom Suf, and they were constantly collecting the gold that was washing up after the Mitzrayim were drowned. Rabbi Israel said that Hashem needed to re-shift their searching. And hence the month.
Okay.
But I'm saying this idea of going this constant pull back to Egypt is not new. This is even after they you know were saved by him
Right. Yeah. It's
a slave mentality.
Right. There's clearly a problem, and they're having a hard time breaking from Egypt. So the complaint is the same. Again, in one, it's what do they have? There's meat in the first one also, right? Miachlinu basar zachar. Oh, there was fish only there. Zacharnu tadaga. Right? The story has changed a little bit. We didn't have meat, but we had and we didn't have bread, but we had fish and fruit and vegetables. But Moshe and Hashem and Moshe's reaction is different. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Inini mamtir lachem lechem in Hashemayim. God says, I'm going to give you man from the sky, and everything's going to be fine. You'll collect it every day. And on the sixth day, you're going to go out and collect a double portion. This is in the night you're going to know, and in the morning you're going to know everything's going to be fine. You're going to have meat at night. It's just like, leave us alone. It's not our problem. It's all on Hashem. Hashem will take care of you. So Moshe says to Aaron, tell the Jewish people that they should come close to God because he heard everything. So Aaron speaks to the people, he turns towards the desert, and the presence of God is seen in the Anan. So here it sounds like everything is, it's the same complaint. They're saying, we don't like the food. We don't like, we want meat. We need something good. It was great in Egypt, and here it stinks. Right? Take care of us. And God's reaction is like, fine, you're right, no problem. I will provide you with man. So what's the difference? Why does Moshe lose it the second time? Not the first time. And usually, right, like, this is at least what I was told when I, you know, started, like, in leadership positions years and years ago. It's like, it's okay to make a mistake the first time, but the goal is to learn from the mistake so that the second time, it's not a big deal. So, like, you're going to be in a lot of situations that are going to be challenging, but once you master it the first time, then the second time, you're like, I've kind of been there, done that, right? So isn't it the same thing here? Moshe Rabbeinu, he dealt with it. It's the first time he had no idea what to do. God said to him, listen, this is the plan. All right, fine, this is the plan, great. But now we'll...
I think maybe he's seeing it as, it's not something, dealing with it, you expect people to learn a little bit. But he sees that it's going to be two steps forward, two steps back. Mm-hmm. He's not going anywhere. It's going to be, he sees it as knowing that every time he has to do something, it's going to come right back full circle. And, you know, start over.
So you're saying what Moshe Rabbeinu basically says, they're hopeless.
Right.
So he, like, but the second time he's like, God, I just can't do this anymore. Like, to put me through the same thing over and over again, you know, the same way a leader should grow from the experience, be like, I got this. the people are like, okay, we know how this one plays itself out. I hear that. Okay, it's good. Anybody else?
Oh, the second time, you already had the 70s camera also working with him, right? So some of the burden was already somewhat relieved.
No, the second time he doesn't have this Shivim's Kingdom. Right. He's gonna. The Shivim's Kingdom is the reaction to this story.
I'm looking backwards. Never mind. Disregard.
Yeah, okay. The first one, Hashem got angry too. The second one, Hashem's not angry.
The hold on, which one?
Oh, this is right. These are backwards.
Right. Sorry. The Pavidor is on the top. Right, so, God seems to be okay with it the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
What's saying to the people? Like the people. Like, first time they have no idea. So yeah, go with that. We understand. You know, you don't have any idea. The second time, but the same way the leader should, like I said, the people should learn too. So it's upsetting.
Right. So we did Rabbi Liebtag a long time ago, which Rabbi Liebtag basically says like these are like legitimate complaints. There is no right. They brought matzah, lots of it, I suppose, right out into the desert, and it lasted them a month. And after a month, they ran out of food. So people are like, okay, there's 3 million of us. We're in the middle of the desert. God, there's no food. What's your plan? Right? At least in Egypt, there was something to eat. So God's answer is, well, what you're saying is legitimate. Fine, I'll bring you man. Now they have man for a year plus. Now they're complaining. So now it's complaining just for the sake of complaining. So that is already like not acceptable. Meaning if you complain, there's something real to be upset about, fine. But to complain about something that's not really like real, that's not fair. So that's a possibility. But I want to share with you, I think an amazing idea by Rabbi Sacks. He quotes Ronald Heffetz, who's some like, I don't know, brilliant scholar of some sort. He quotes him and says the following. Now, there's two types of challenges that we have. We have technical challenges and adaptive challenges. What's the difference? So a technical challenge is you have a problem, someone else provides the solution, and you're all fine. So you get like you get a really bad virus, cold, I don't know, whatever, something. You get something that like you could medicate. So what happens? You come to the doctor. The doctor says, oh, you have blah, blah, blah. Here's a prescription, take this pill and you're gonna be fine. And then you're fine. He says, that's a technical challenge. It's a problem, there's an outside solution, it's all good. So what's an adaptive challenge? That's where there's a problem with you. And the only way to fix it is to fix you. So what's an example of that? A person goes to the doctor and the doctor says, listen, I wanna let you know, you're like not healthy. And you're going to have, you have this problem and this problem and this problem, a heart problem. Goes, but the root of the problem is that you're overweight. And the only way that you're going to fix it is by losing weight. There's no pill. You have to fix it. Once you fix it, all of your problems will be better. So that's an adaptive challenge. The world and circumstances that surround you, they need to be changed in order to fix the situation. Or the problem is an internal problem, you have to fix it. So he says that's the difference. Shmos is all technical problems. We're in the desert. Our stash of food ran out. What are you going to do? Moshe Rabbeinu, you can provide, tell them that I'm going to give you the script. This is how you get food. There is no water. Okay. We have to solve all these problems. But Bamidbar is all about adaptive problems. It's they have to reach the point where they have to figure out that a big part of all of these things, if you want something, you have to do it, number one. And you have to believe in Hashem that he's going to take care of you along the way. That is so much harder. Moshe Rabbeinu is a master leader when it comes to technical problems. It's much harder for a leader to deal with adaptive problems.
Wait, for these adaptive problem issues, they didn't have meat or fish. Are you saying that they should have trusted Hashem that in a few more days he would have provided them that, or the
well, first of all,
complaint
they're like,
wasn't legitimate?
The complaint is a problem. You're in the desert. You're a few days away from like coming to civilization to conquer the land of Israel. You're not, like, there's not something you have to worry about right now. Again, like, there is legitimate, like, I have no food. That's bad. There's, I have food, but I'd rather have better food. But I think to say it the way I said it just before is maybe not fair, because then it really says that Moshe's the problem. And that Moshe's...
To an extent, he is a little bit.
So I'm not...
This is the whole humanity of the whole thing, right? They're people. He's a person. You know, there's only so much a human can tolerate before they break, right? Eat cereal 3 times a day, every day, for the next 10 years. Eventually you're going to say, really?
Captain Crunch?
Maybe. You know, the same cereal, Captain Crunch, for 10 years every day. And then you come and complain to me, seriously?
That's a problem.
He's human. That won't last more than a week. He's human too, you know?
A week.
Right.
So I don't know.
Right, no, I hear that, and I think that's part of the answer that Moshe's told. You need colleagues.
Right.
Leadership is a very lonely place.
Right.
Being Moshe is even lonelier than being a leader.
He's cracking.
He's like that. Okay, so that's part of it. But I think a bigger part of it is that it's not only that Moshe realizes that, like, okay, technical issues, like, I could deal with. Like, there's a script. Problem, fix it, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I think that it's also Moshe Rabbeinu senses that, like, they're not going to be able to handle it. It's like this group of people, they're just not going to hack it. And so therefore, like, I'm frustrated because it's just going to get worse. And we know, I mean, like, everything gets really bad but next week.
Right? So the truth is that he's right, right? Because his intuition has remained the same ever since. It hasn't changed.
Right, so Moshe's set. I think
we still are.
I think that at the end of Bamidbar, that's where Moshe Rabbeinu, like post Chet Ha'egel, like at the end of the 40 years, that's where if you listen to the people's complaints, sometimes they complain about one thing, and Moshe's still hearing echoes of like the previous generation, and he's like, God, this can't be happening again. I don't think that's the case here. I think Moshe Rabbeinu legitimately intuits that these people just will never be able to do it. And that's his frustration. But he's trying to get them to deal with adaptive situations, and it's really, really hard for him. But it could be that part of the problem is the way he feels about himself is that he's Anochi Ariti. Babies don't have adaptive issues as much as technical issues. Right, there's no food, they're hungry, you stick a bottle in their mouth, like, they're fine. They're dirty, you change their diaper, they're fine. Like, that's much more of a child's problem. As they get older, they start having adaptive issues. But if a parent is so overbearing, they won't be able to pull it off. So I'll end just by a beautiful idea that Rabbi Sacks shares with it, which is the message that Yoshua gets from God. Yoshua is told by God, Chazak ve'matz, and then Rak Chazak ve'matz me'od. He's told, like, in Perek Aleph, 3 times he's told Chazak ve'matz. But one of them he's told me'od. So what? Why? What? Like, first of all, why does he need so many times? So why is it there's one time Chazak ve'matz and Chazak ve'matz me'od? So Rabbi Sacks says, what's the first one, Chazak ve'matz? You have to go conquer the land of Israel. That's a hard job. Chazak ve'matz. Be strong. He goes, but he's then told, you're going to have to spiritually change the way the Jewish people are. What's God say there? Chazak ve'amatz me'od. That's a really, really hard one. I think, if I recall correctly, I think that's what Rabbi Sacks is saying, that the first chazak ve'amatz, the military one, it's a technical issue. You have to fight the war, there has to be a strategy, but there's plans and you'll do it. But to change the way the people are, that's much, 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 much harder. And that's chazak ve'amatz me'od. And the hope is that you know, he'll be able to do it. I think for all of us, that is really, like, the biggest challenge. That there's, you know, technical issues that we struggle with, like, we're able to figure it out. Like, we know, like, there's this, and usually the solution is something that someone else could provide for us. But being able to take a look in the mirror and say, like, I am actually the problem, that's much harder to fix. But if one is able to fix that, the return on investment on a challenge like that is much greater. So hopefully we shouldn't be challenged too much, but if we are, hopefully we should rise to the occasion.